second episode, press X to start. We are in our second season, so glad to be back with you all.
Woo! Woo!
Press X is a weekly gaming podcast about inclusivity.
Trip me up, too.
Yeah. God damn it.
And its place in gaming. Games are for everyone, and we at Press X hope to break down the walls of exclusivity.
There you go.
Why is that such an easier word to say? I don't know.
Because the X.
Yeah.
Oh, because Press X.
And X is going to give it to
news,
you.
News, reviews, and all things video gaming. This week, your hosts are myself, Cameron, Marcus.
Your Who Am I Heavyweight Champion from the I Wish a Nigga Would.
Oh my God. DJ.
Hey guys.
And the brother in gaming over there.
I'm Avery.
I love that so much.
And so with that out the way, introductions out the way, we're going to get into our first segment of the day, which is, what have we been playing?
Which is
no. I've been... Well, I haven't been.
You haven't been playing anything?
No, not really.
Nothing that we can talk about right now.
Yeah, nothing we really want to talk about right now.
So, Cam, what are we going to talk about?
What we're going to talk about is the Black Panther.
No, cut the feed. I'm going
to The Black has been stripped you in.
So, last week, the guys got to get together on the mic to talk about their review of the Black Panther. And I want to take a few moments to share my thoughts. I've actually now at this point seen the movie twice. So the first time I saw the movie, right, at the end I wept.
Oh, wow.
Like, I'm not even going to lie. Like, I cried at the end. It was just, I was overwhelmed. And I remember I stepped out of the theater. Just,
Wait, were you overwhelmed by the whole movie? Okay,
but
I get you.
Particularly, the scene that really had me overwhelmed was the first challenge scene. Because it's just the visuals, the music, everybody over there doing a little like shoulder shrug, and then like the harmonies when they were singing T'Challa, T'Challa, like you know what I'm saying? Like I was just like, yo, this is some beautiful.
I could see how
movie.
That was a lot. Like that was a lot to take in.
Yeah, like I was literally on the verge of like tears then, but I was like, all right, let me just hold it in. But then at the end, when everything was great, I just lost it. And so on the second time around, just saw some different stuff.
Right.
Oh. And, thank you. So the second time around, I went in with the mindset that I was going to, like, particularly pay attention to Killmonger's character. And I focused more so on the score. And I've been listening to the actual score, not the Kendrick Lamar, like...
Yeah, the score.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, man.
Yeah, Ludwig did his thing.
Yeah. And then with Killmonger's character, what I realized, in addition to him like having like you know speaking with the rage, I guess, of Black Americans or people of color around the world, I was particularly looking at his relationship with like Black women in the movie and how destructive that was.
Yeah.
One thing I picked up on was when he got when his girlfriend got captured. The first thing she said was, "I'm sorry, Eric." And to me, that's the mind of the other. This dude probably was abusing this girl.
No, I think it would. Well. That's a possibility, but I think that it was more like
she knows
I messed up.
Yeah,
I got caught.
Yeah, she knows what's going to
happen.
But
she really didn't mess up though.
Not well.
Well
she,
that seems weird. Anyway.
It's the mindset of like because I've heard that like said by like in movies with soldiers when they get caught too when they're just like I messed up and like it's a mindset of like we had a thing that was going on and the operation was supposed to be flawless
and I was a weak link.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is also still kind of
to carry a point from our review. There was a moment when I believe everyone was talking about how great the female characters were in the movie, and I made the well that was what I was talking about.
Right, yeah. And it also I like to say that when I mentioned females, like I didn't think about her because of how small her part was.
Yeah,
and it like it's just oversight on my part as well.
Yeah, no, because she was definitely handled. Not great.
Did not have a name.
Yeah.
Oh, she didn't.
No.
I mean, Marvel fans knew she was Deadly Nightshade.
She's not. That's the problem. She's not Deadly. No. She was originally cast. They're like, oh, she's playing Deadly Nightshade. She went on Twitter like, hey guys, I'm playing this character, Tilda Johnson. And then Deadly Nightshade was cast in Luke Cage. And I don't know what was happening, but Marvel just got rid of all of that.
So they even went through the trouble of giving her like the poison stick. And
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, she had a poison stick?
I mean, poison shtick. That's what I mean.
Oh, the first time you meet her, she's the one who poisons the
she got that white woman diarrhea.
Well, kill the white woman.
I did not make that connection
and I'm
at
like,
all.
Oh, this is Deadly Nightshade.
Well, because she worked at the coffee bar.
Yeah.
And she walked away she looked all, and then Killmonger was like, you talking about me, but you don't even pay attention to what you're putting in your body.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I saw understood the poison aspect, but I didn't understand that it was because of her. Yeah.
So then my other critique of Killmonger, I'm not trying to read stale takes because I feel like we've gotten enough stale takes with Killmonger. Was I realized his like the heart of his plan? Like I connected with it. Mm-hmm. Yo, by the way, that scene when he's like taking the throne into the camera upside down.
Yes,
oh, that Dutch tilt boy. Somebody, a friend of mine on Facebook said that only Ryan Coogler could find a way to make something so film schooly so dope.
Yeah,
and I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
But like his plan was really dumb. It was just to me, it was just as dumb as Nas's verse. And if I ruled the world, like I would open every cell in Attica and send them to Africa. Like you gonna sell all these criminals to Africa? Like what is that gonna do? All these weapons to these oppressed people? Like
yeah,
it's a dumb plan.
Yeah. Well, the part Killmonger is a lot of people have had talked about how his plan really doesn't make any sense. I think was on record on another episode that his plan entirely tracks of what he was trying to do. Mm. My issue with the plan, and they actually call it out in the movie, is that at a certain point it stops being about this theme about I want to save the oppressed and more like I'm taking revenge on Wakanda. Because like Ever K. Roth is like, yeah, everything he's doing, that's what we do to destabilize governments to take them down from the inside.
Yeah.
Because people were talking about he was killing so many Africans, and I'm like, yeah, he was destabilizing the area. Like he went in there,
burning the heart-shaped herbs.
Yeah,
they went into discreet detail to tell you about his time in the military and how he would go in, and that was a tactic of his.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, that's what he's going to be doing here.
Yeah.
Now the intention or like some of the execution of his plan, that was kind of like,
it tracks. For me, up until the point where Child doesn't say anything to anyone about Killmonger's involvement in the entire Claw situation. The whole Wakabi betrayal, which is one of my big issues with the movies, as I look back on it and how he was sort of disturbed by the film in terms of not having much to do until he makes a heel face turn that doesn't really make any sense. Mm. All Child would have to say is, oh, Claw got away. He's the reason he got away. I saw him there.
I think because I get why that was an annoyance, but I think it was because he was trying to figure out.
It's like I said, it tracks. I have no problem with that. It's just one of those things where like that moment disserves Daniel Kaluuya's character because his entire betrayal is the fact that Chala failed. He succeeded.
Nah, yeah, if at the very least it would have been nice to get a scene where he goes to Wakabi and be like, yo, so there's this dude who like completely messed up the op, but he had this medallion, like he had the ring. So I'm not sure if he's one of us.
But I still like that. Still would have like created this a bad, not necessarily rub. But
well, the thing is,
it would have created a tension. But Wakabi joining Killmonger wouldn't have made sense if you know for a fact that this is Killmonger's entire plan to make Child look bad.
So, but then here's the other thing. Like I kind of picked up on why Wakabi would have been with Killmonger, because he says in the beginning, like before he makes that statement about refugees, you bring them here, whatever, you bring them problems here. But he says, now if you want to send me over there, I'm good to go. And so if the idea is that Killmonger shows up and he introduces himself, he says who he is, I'm sure by the time you have to assume that Wakabi and Killmonger are having this conversation about, okay, let's send these weapons and all this stuff.
Well, yeah, because Wakabi was about that action, and they were telling.
And then, problem.
You have to assume that, wasn't explained.
My problem then, you go to the actual scene where T'Challa comes back, and he's like, "I didn't yield, and I'm not dead." Like Wakabi's border tribe literally turns to him and say, "What are we supposed to do?" Mm-hmm. So it's very clear that they are only doing this because of the chains of leadership, not because Wakabi has an idealistic reason to do
that.
This
is a good point.
But I think that speaks more so to Wakabi's leadership than actually like
his personal feelings.
And then we'll get to the leadership thing. One thing I talked about in the episode is there's clearly another leader of the border tribe there, and that guy just disappears.
That's true. The older black dude.
They look like Wakabi's father. Basically.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, and he was nowhere to be seen.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So it looks like Wakabi unilaterally just break. Said, "This is what the Border Tribe is doing."
But you know, but
they Wakabi makes, killed but it makes, his dad off screen.
You know, it makes sense though, because one of the things that Killmonger does once he takes his throne is like he pretty much placed the elders at a lower like. I guess like at a lower sense of importance.
Yeah.
Because if you look at that next throne scene, there are no elders there. I mean, or
They're
there, but like where
he's only talking to
like Wakabi, or he's taking the input from like those of his peers. And yeah. It's not wise. And so it makes sense why Wakabi would not go to an elder to say like, "Hey, what do you think we should do?" Because Killmonger has already empowered him. Killmonger's not even using the Dora to like which are supposed to be his personal guard. He doesn't even lean on them.
Yeah.
To that point, T'Challa, when he has his war council scene, Wakabi is there. So it's not like Wakabi's station changed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. True. That's true.
It illustrates one of the things that came out of this movie is that Coogler pretty much said that, hey, there's an entire scene between Wakabi and Okoye, which I cut out of the movie.
Yeah.
And it pretty much illustrates... It not illustrates, but the intention of the scene was to explain Wakabi's entire motivation, Okoye's entire motivation,
yeah.
And to solidify one of my other problems that these two had a relationship that right. Didn't really track on screen.
Because the original cut of the movie was 4 hours long.
And what there was, of it?
Oh, yeah. But, like, the thing is, the problem is there was stuff that had to be cut for time, yeah. And one of the things that Coogler and, I think, his writer were trying to really fight to keep in the film was that scene.
Yeah.
And they ended up having to concede on it. So I'm sure there will be a director's cut.
The scene's going to be on the DVD.
Okay.
But
okay.
In my mindset of films and film canon, it's not a canon scene unless it's in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the other 2 hours will be... What's with a struggling through... I'm
sure that one thing that I'm hoping for coming out of this movie, like, and I posted this on Facebook, is that thankfully it's opened up discussions that you would not expect from a Hollywood blockbuster, and I think it's opened up a forum which is good. It has a potential, if we allow it, to heal and give clarity. But also, I think that there are things that it did right, and I think it did a lot of things right, but it also did things that could be improved upon. And I believe that if they can pull off a Winter Soldier level jump, I think that the next Black Panther movie.
I think it's 85% a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, 85% what?
A perfect movie.
Okay.
I think that the next movie, like I said, if they can pull off what Captain America did with Winter Soldier, I think that Black Panther 2 will be like the best Marvel movie there ever been.
I just hope that this paves the way for not even more Black Marvel movies, just more Black like superhero movies that doesn't involve drugs, gangsters.
That's a tough.
Yeah.
Like,
you're not, well,
Static Shock involves drugs and gangsters.
I mean, but
Black Lightning involves drugs and gangsters.
I still feel a certain kind of way of Black Lightning, but
Icon.
I mean, Static Shock. Okay, that's fine as long as it's more superhero than drugs and gangsters.
Oh, yeah,
like that.
You want to
like? I just want to see like Black people in more predominantly like empowering roles than the negative roles.
It gets to a point what you're talking about is like people have praised sort of Killmonger's performance and things like that. And I saw a lot of dialogue about how like this is a great movie because it doesn't play on the tropes that they're very typical to sort of Black art. But then you look at Killmonger's performance, the strongest performance in the movie, and that's all it is.
Right. No.
It's all it is.
Like he's playing on this character of Killmonger is playing on a very Black specific pain.
But I think that works in this case because this is a Black movie. Yeah, so we're dealing with two types of like Black experiences.
I'll say another thing is like I understand your hope for more Black superhero movies that are divorced from that, but a lot of Black superheroes are street level or to a degree come from
I guess what I'm saying is not necessarily us going back into the well of those like superheroes, but like people making new content or making new heroes or IP based off of this empowerment.
Point, I will tell you, with someone currently reading comics, that is a pipe dream.
Oh really?
Because when those new characters are created, no one reads them. When if they do read them, they don't get read to a level where like we can get rid of Tony Stark and replace him with Riri.
Yeah.
You can't.
Okay.
Like, Tony is way too popular.
Yeah.
Way too popular.
But here's my thing, though. Like, you're, for example, with Miles and with Riri, you're trying to force them into characters that are already
established.
And I think that's the problem.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Versus with Black Panther, is a character that isn't built within the paradigm of another white character.
But then the problem is that when someone does go out of the way to create a new character of sort of like a different...
It's hard to get that role in.
Yeah, it's hard to get that role
in. Right, and I understand that.
Works within the context of Nick Fury, who is now Samuel L. Jackson for eternity.
That is true as well.
The circumstances of Ralph King and Black Nick Fury are bizarre and weird.
Yeah.
And
From what I've understood to a degree, like, DC has done a better job at making black characters come up from under something like Static Shock.
Even Cyborg.
Yeah.
Then because DC has...
Lucius, his son, becomes like Batwing, right?
Okay, so wait. I see that we are going off on a tangent. So I appreciate this. Everybody finish your thought.
So to that point, the difference between Marvel and DC, DC operates on a thing of a legacy.
Yeah.
So like if there is a black... Superman or a black Wonder Woman or a black anything, you always feel like it tracks because of, there was this version of Wonder Woman, then there was this version of Wonder Woman, or this version of... With Marvel, they've never really had that, so that's why those decisions don't really make sense. Couple that with DC was built on 10 different, like, smaller comic book companies that came together.
Yeah.
So, like, most of these characters didn't have have to be forced into, like, you have to be a Batman character.
Yeah,
and it's alternate universes on top of that.
Right.
So, cool. Yeah, all right, so
let's move on to something about video games.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So to end this, Cam.
Yeah.
What was your final take on Black Panther?
Ooh.
Because we were all able to give our little.
Right. That's true.
Okay. My final take on Black Panther was, one, being able to see a compelling Marvel villain that wasn't Loki. And actually watched Spider-Man Homecoming right before I saw Black Panther, and I was like, okay, I like where they're going.
Yeah, his Vulture was great.
Mm.
Yeah, and I like where Marvel's going now with these villains. The other part was, it's great to see, I just thought about how the fact that everyone looked beautiful.
Yes.
Like, it was beautiful, the colors were beautiful.
The art direction was phenomenal.
That art direction, boy.
And, I think that's part of why I felt overwhelmed. My final takeaway, I didn't like So T'Challa tried to work this perfect path of like, okay, I'm gonna do this thing in Oakland and we'll give him this UN stage and say this. To me, that was kind of like really like all lives matter-ish. So I wasn't really feeling it. So.
What was that word?
All lives matter-ish.
Two
like Marvel reveals at the end. I mean, well, that one and the Bucky one were pretty much useless to me. Hey.
Me too, to be honest.
The first one was useless. The second one's fantastic. We're Bucky Barnes fan.
Yeah, if you are a deep. If you're deep in the lore of Marvel, as Avery is, because I was just like, I don't need this at all.
I'm like,
but
why couldn't they just show why Cap would be in Wakanda? So we can get to Infinity Wars.
Right.
But sure.
All right, well, we'll be back after a short break.
Hey guys, we just wanted to take this time to let you guys know where you can find us on the general interwebs. We still have a website, which is Press X2Start. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Facebook at PressX2Start, Twitter at PressX2S, and Instagram on PressX2Start. And then you can find us on any podcasting app that you prefer. We have the iTunes, Google Play, and Podbean. For Podbean, just look up PressX2Start.podbean.com. iTunes, Google Play, at PressX2Start. Thanks.
Hey, welcome back. So now, we're going to get to the part that actually was about gaming. Avery, you want to take it away with our gaming news section?
Yes, I am. Okay, so first big piece of news that came across my desk is that Final Fantasy XV is coming to PC in the next couple of weeks. And their big piece of pre-order bonus, which is super bizarre, is that Noctis and your creator character for their comrades mode can be dressed like Gordon Freeman from Half-Life.
What?
Yeah.
Yo, it's like they're just doing anything with this game. Like,
essentially. That gets to the second part is that.
That's not cool, Valve.
Yeah. Well,
Half-Life 4.
Square has come out and said, yeah, we're still slash making Final Fantasy 15 content into 2019.
Yeah. Which is good, which is really good.
A new Final Fantasy.
No, we're not going to get a new Final Fantasy. No. Grip. Like,
but I actually think that this is Final Fantasy is working as a game of service, but in a different way from the other games of service.
Yeah.
And I applaud them for how they are being on it with content that's both very interesting and very strange at the same time.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. But so then so how does this work with the team that's supposed to be doing the Final Fantasy VII?
Well, it
doesn't. That's not existing anymore.
No, that's a separate team.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
Okay, it's Nomura's team.
Yeah.
Okay, as
yeah.
long as I get that game.
Isn't that after the same Kingdom Hearts system?
Yes.
If my Square Enix math works out right, we will get Kingdom Hearts 3 this year, and then we will finally see Episode 1 of Final Fantasy 7 next year.
Next year.
Yeah. Okay. There's no way that can't be a 2020 game.
Honestly do believe that we're getting it this year because they dropped the
you're talking about Kingdom Hearts?
Yeah. The Utada song, like they would not drop that if they weren't planning to push for it to be this year.
I believe it when it's in my hand.
I know.
We made a pizza bet. I'm pretty sure everyone remembers that.
Yeah. I'm buying pizza.
Yes, you is. You sure is.
Where did Cam go? For some reason, Cam hasn't shown up for the last 3 weeks.
Right.
I would like some government cheese on my pizza.
A second piece of news. Mm-hmm. In the wake of the recent mass shooting, there's been a lot of hullabaloo in Capitol Hill about what caused it. Mental health. Guns. The current scapegoat right now is video games.
We're
in 1990 again.
I think it was the AR-15 that caused the shooting.
Yeah,
I think it was the AR-15. But I might be wrong though. But I think it was that.
Guns don't kill people.
Right.
People kill people.
Yeah. Yes.
From the hit film Romeo Must Die. I find this news. Whatever, I don't think there's anything of consequence going to come for this. I find it comical, however, because our current commander-in-chief, minority vote-winning criminal, under criminal investigation, Donald Twimp, has come out and said that he believes that video games should have some sort of rating system.
It's like he's never picked up a video game in his life.
Right.
It's like, what?
Yeah, bro, so that's crazy. You still need, idea, whatever, to get a video game than, buy AR.
Yes.
And you know, it's just funny because like in most things, if things go wrong, they make it harder to get it, like a driver's license or something like that. Except guns.
Side tangent: there was a video that's kind of floating around now. Although I will say, I don't know the exact credibility of the video, but the video describes this 13-year-old boy trying to buy cigarettes. Alcohol, and then gun. Tried to buy a gun. He gets denied the cigarettes. He gets denied the alcohol, but I think he's able to purchase like a shotgun.
Whoa!
And it's just like, what the fuck? Yo, what the actual fuck?
I'm gonna check that video. That can't be, bro.
Yeah.
It's a social experiment.
You're right.
Whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay. So
nice roast of Donald, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump.
I stumbled a bit.
Yeah.
Not my Donald.
It's a joke I took from somewhere else. I'm just trying to remember it in my head that I was doing it. But yeah, it came out in the end. So in other news, Hideo Kojima's Death Stranding.
Yeah, I didn't know about this one.
Cameron? Yeah.
Has announced 2 new cast members.
Okay, what? Who?
Well,
Rick from Walking Dead and Michonne from Walking Dead.
Wait, no.
all that money this year, boy.
Troy Baker.
Of course he's in this.
Who worked with him previously on Metal Gear 5 as Revolver Ocelot. Which is a weird thing, because like it was just Revolver Ocelot, but if he had Troy's face.
That's hilarious.
Right.
Wait, was he that guy that floated down in the trailer?
No, that's Mads.
Okay.
Yeah, and then this female voice actress who worked in... Soaps. I believe her name is Emily O'Brien. She's a soap actress, but you probably would have known her from Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy. She's done some League of Legends stuff, and she's going to be in Days Gone.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So
that works.
Two new cast members, which
don't warrant intros.
I thought it was gonna be the other dude. Is he not Troy Baker, but the other
Nolan North?
Guy. Nolan North.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, not, I thought them together.
Not Nolan ain't hardcore enough for this. You know, my man Troy coming off playing Joel again, so we probably got a little more scruff.
Right.
From what I can tell, casting indicates that there is a game. Like, in terms of, like, he has his narrative. There is an actual game beyond
just the videos.
30 saying, like, he spent, like, 6 hours in it or
something.
Yeah,
okay.
So
I guess also this kind of confirms or probably... No, it seems that Norman and Mads are the biggest cast in this movie.
Right.
I'm sorry.
This game.
Oh, movie.
The way he do them cutscenes, it might be a movie.
I'm optimistic. Uh-huh. I think, based on what Kojima has said in interviews, that, like, he's not slow. He's like, that we can work.
Was he slow?
We can work on time. This might be a late 2019, early 2020 game.
Okay.
So, do you think we'll get, like, either a gameplay trailer or a new trailer in E3 this year?
E3, I don't think, like, here's the thing. Personally, I don't want a gameplay trailer. I just want another weird ass fucking like tone piece. I feel like if we're gonna stick with, I think they have a lot. It's weird because Sony, there are a lot of questions going into Sony's 2019 in terms of Last of Us, other games, what they're gonna do after those things, if PS5 is even like something people were talking about. So if I was Sony, I would save. Well, I would do what they did this year, which is like, we're save Death Stranding stuff for Game Awards.
And honestly, like, I understand people's want for a gameplay trailer, but like, I almost want them to just complete, like, keep doing these tone pieces, then drop it on us like Beyonce.
So the reason why I don't want these, like, a weird trailer, not because I don't find them interesting, I do, and it's fulfilling a need that the gaming industry doesn't have right now. Excuse me. Doesn't have right now because Kojima hasn't been really in it for a minute. But the reason why I want a gameplay trailer, is because I gotta see how this plays out.
I understand.
Like, it's at a point where certain games, it's so weird that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then particularly if you think about that Rolling Stone article where Kojima was like, it's not going to be like your typical game. It's going to be like an RTS. Yeah,
something about ropes and sticks. Yeah. And I get what you mean.
Yeah. I got to contextualize this.
You got to have something. That's fair.
Yeah, I'm in the mindset that like Kojima hasn't made a game that I disliked, especially from a gameplay perspective. And as a creator, he's gone out of his way to take what was a very standard action stealth game and essentially evolve it into an open world action stealth game with Monster Hunter parts to it. So
this gets into, so like MGS3 is my favorite and I think personally the best Metal Gear Solid game there is.
What about Metal Gear?
My issue with Metal Gear Solid
Survive.
Oh my god. I thought we were gonna make it through a podcast without talking about that abomination. But my issue with 4 was because like Kojima,
it's a movie.
Yeah. And so then like Kojima was just, I don't know what he was doing. Like, I liked the game, but it wasn't my favorite because it was a movie and it was like all these unorganized ideas thrown together. Mm-hmm. And then my issue with 5 is gameplay is fantastic, but
story's a little.
It has no story.
Yeah.
It has 2/3 of a story and no ending to it.
Right.
And so my fear with Death Stranding is I'm going to get something that's reminiscent of 4 where I'm just going to be sitting there watching it the entire time and I personally don't mind, but like if you think about the average cutscene in that game, had you putting the joystick down for probably about 20 minutes.
I feel like there's the difference we'll get with Death Stranding, and this is completely just guessing.
Yeah.
Is I feel like this game is going to be extremely immersive with tone and mood and the vibe that it's going to be giving you.
Yeah.
So I feel like there won't be extremely long cutscenes. It'll be more of like, he's going to put all his effort into making this world something that's so off-putting and bizarre and making this an experience that's one of a kind.
Yeah.
That, like almost in the way that Hellblade is, that they won't need super long cutscenes, but you will feel sometimes like you're in one.
Yeah, and so the reason why I brought MGS3, and just to tie it, because I didn't even, like, why did I bring it? MGS3 was the trifecta that had a fantastic score. It had the gameplay, everything made sense. And, like, the writing was tight.
Yeah.
And so you felt like he was going for this Bond-era thriller, and you got that.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping for Death Stranding that it's going to be more aligned with that. Like, the writing's going to be tight, the score's going to be fantastic, and then the action itself.
It's going to be his Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
On that tip, Four is my favorite Metal Gear. It's my favorite Metal Gear because he did... As someone who's played every Metal Gear game, every successive game has made the meta narrative of that game worse and worse and worse. Four was the one that finally took everything to task and gave an explanation and tied everything together. So when you get to the end and the boss shows up, I'm like, wow. Four has the best Metal Gear moments of all time. Like going back to Shadow Moses in HD and then.
I disagree.
And then getting into Metal Gear Rex to fight Metal Gear Ray.
Well, yeah, that.
I mean, I still.
And then the game ends with a fist fight between you and Revolver Ocelot.
Okay, yeah.
that goes between every generation of Metal Gear game. Like I get everyone's that criticism.
That almost seems like a crazy movie ending. So yeah, I
get
what you.
Like I get everyone's criticism of it's how like. Involved it was in terms of a story. You got these massive cutscenes, but as someone who was invested in the story and loved the gameplay, it was the perfect thing for me. Okay. Though I can understand, but it's not the Metal Gear game I would tell anyone to play, like straight up. If anything, go either play 5, which is the most modern, or play, I want to say 2 because that's the easiest to find.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I would tell them to play 3.
I wouldn't tell them to play 2.
I would tell them to play 3 Substance. Oh, not regular.
I would tell them to play 2 because of that story. They wouldn't know what the hell's going on.
No, the story is...
Two-story fucking...
That is a mess.
It's a mess.
Who is this guy? What?
The entire last act is like, is anything real?
It would be like, where's Snake? Who is this guy?
Continuing on, another story that sort of interests our group because we are giant Overwatch fans. Is that there has Blizzard has come out and dropped some hints about Hero 27. I want to say a week ago they had a blog post introducing a Operation White Dome, which was a apparently operation in Overwatch's past that involved Ana, Reinhardt, Torbjorn, and this new character named I apologize for this news, Emre Sengolu in Turkey. And so we're like, oh, this must be the first sort of news leaking because the next event after the winter, Lunar New Year is going to be their Uprising one.
Which
is their, I guess, lore base background origins of Overwatch.
Right.
And we're like, oh, this is going to be the new mission. But then as people looked into it later on, I'm like, this is the mission where Torbjorn loses an arm. And they released another bit of lore after the fact where Torbjorn wrote a letter to his wife explaining everything that's happened to him over this mission, how much he, like, loves Reinhardt for saving his life, and how he kind of owes Reinhardt, like, to make him godfather of their kid and things like that.
Yeah.
And so this sort of set the Overwatch lore fans crazy. And, like, this sounds a lot like Orisa, because when Orisa was first announced, they showed the Ify stuff. And I'm like, is Ify going to be the new character? Then they eventually revealed, oh, it's Orisa, and she's tied into Ify. What we're all assuming right now, we could easily be wrong, is that they're hinting at Brigitte being Hero 27.
Yeah, okay.
Torbjorn's daughter and Reinhardt's squire.
Got you. Yeah. Okay.
That'd be kind of dope. Like, she would blend the kind of two styles.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Think she have a shield?
I'm hoping she's a defense hero because the game needs another defense hero and now another attack hero. And as I've been looking into my personal meta, I don't play defense hero at any point.
So she could be yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can try and jump into that. Because I tried playing Hanzo a couple of days ago, and I'm like, I don't like this at all.
Yeah, Hanzo is tough, man.
I don't like Widowmaker either. Yeah. I was forced to play Mei for the winter thing. I'm like, I don't like this.
Yeah,
Mei's a little too slow.
I found Torbjorn too passive, and I hate Bastion too much to want to learn how to play him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I need a defense hero.
Yeah.
The speculation is we're getting Hero 27. I think we're probably going to see him or her in the next two to 3 weeks.
Okay.
Uh, And then our last bit of news is that we had the DICE Awards, which has been described as if the VGAs are sort of like the Golden Globes or like the MTV Movie Awards of right. more realistically the MTV Movie
yeah,
Awards.
Yeah, it's absolutely the MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah.
The DICE Awards are sort of like other Oscars, where it's more like here's an Academy of Motion Pictures, well, Games, Arts, and Sciences all voting together on a panel.
Oh, it's wow. also racist. I'm sorry. Because of Oscars.
Oh.
There you go.
Boy. I don't know where to go from.
Man, you really just went like the that game developer that was like, F the Oscars, huh? Right. Did that with the podcast.
They're not gonna hear this.
Anyway, so Greg Miller and Jessica Chobot hosted it, and I didn't actually get time to watch.
What's Chobot doing?
She's working at Nerdist right now. I think she's their front of camera person for all their new stuff.
True.
Still married to Blair Herder. Still have that son. Yeah. So in terms of the awards, no real upsets in terms of like awards given and things like that.
Right.
Breath of the Wild got a lot of love. Mario Odyssey got a lot of love. Horizon got a lot of love. I think. Well, the only real upset is Nier Automata beat yes. Persona 5 for Whoa. Best RPG.
No, oh. no, that is a mistake.
Interesting.
And I love Nier, but there is no way that game should beat Persona.
That was like the biggest sort of like upset in terms of the award show.
Like best RPG?
Yeah, best RPG.
Does Nier even count as an RPG?
It counts as an action RPG.
Yeah, it's like a action rail shooter RPG hybrid.
It's a whole thing. What an RPG means doesn't make any sense anymore. Like what a traditional RPG is not what an RPG represents right. anymore.
As long as you're playing a role.
Well, that's the thing. Like, as long as, I think the definition is, as long as your progression in the game is dictated by your character's growth,
right?
Like the actual character's growth, then it's an RPG.
That is a mistake.
Well, that's what happens when you start broadening horizons, my guy.
You need to diversify your bonds, nigga.
I think the most interesting thing that came out of the award show was the amount of awards Nintendo won.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they had one guy from their American office come to accept all the awards, and he had a separate speech for every game that won in that specific category.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's nice.
He's getting a raise.
This is my moment of glory.
So, like, you can look at... You can, moment, if you look up DICE Awards, you'll find a lot of hashtag Nintendo guy, because it's just one guy coming up on stage accepting all these awards, to the point where he got... There's contention whether he got a standing ovation at the end or Breath of the Wild got a standing ovation at the
geez.
End.
Oh, jeez.
Why not both?
Right.
And you think we have time for one bit of news?
Yeah.
Okay. So some rumors have come down the pipe of Super Smash Bros. For Switch this year.
Yay!
To be unleashed alongside Nintendo's online service.
Yep. Yay! Can't okay. wait.
Unfortunately, for me... Because I'm not going to assume for everyone else.
No.
It looks like this is just going to be an port of Smash 4 instead of a brand new Smash title.
Okay, so when you say Smash 4, you don't mean Smash Melee.
Well, Smash... Okay, this is the smart and dumbest thing about the Wii U versus Super Smash Bros. It's called Super Smash Bros. 4 Wii U.
Okay. So that's so not the Melee one.
No. Brawl,
all right, well,
Brawl
I'm out.
Came after Melee.
I'm out.
Right?
Yes. Yes, Melee was a GameCube one. That was the joke. The joke is that they're not remastering the best Smash Brothers.
Nah, I think Brawl was pretty great.
Before we use
it was pretty great, really, but like, it wasn't classic.
So there's a lot of contention there because you know both are great. Melee people just like Melee because it's fast.
They like
and it's balanced. It's good.
Is it balanced? Because
yeah, it's balanced.
No, it's not. Melee is not balanced.
Compared to which one? The one you can trip? Yeah, okay.
Hey,
yeah, okay. Okay. Right. Okay.
One of an online server okay. that they like can actually go back and balance and tweak fighters.
Well, they could if they remaster if they remaster Melee and they provide a competent online system. There you go.
Well, the real
and
if they
do that's that, that's their game of service right there.
And if they
there
do
go.
That, they
there you
piss
go.
Off the Melee people.
But here's my
reason. No.
Because they've had 15
years.
No.
I'm not saying they rebalance anything in Melee because they don't need rebalancing in Melee.
Perfect. DJ's just mad because he's not as good at Brawl.
Which one is Brawl again?
The one that has Solid Snake on
the
it.
The Wii U.
No, that's 4 Wii U.
I'm sorry, my bad.
That one had Ryu.
He's fine.
Which one? Which one trips? Which one trips?
That's yes, Brawl.
Okay, then I hate Brawl.
So here's my question: but if they bring it to Switch, will we be able to use GameCube controllers?
Based on the fact that they recently allowed GameCube controller support to Switch, I'm gonna say last year, yes.
All right, that's all that matters.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. That's true.
I'm just like. There is a point of contention where, like, if they make a brand new game, they might lose characters like Cloud and Ryu and things like that.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I want to see this.
They need a new game.
Yeah, I want to see the franchise grow. Yeah. And I think
so. They can put Overwatch characters in it.
And if you want Overwatch characters in a big brawl, play Heroes of the Storm. They're just putting all the Overwatch characters. Yeah. In that. But no, it's I want to see characters grow. I want to see the franchise grow and evolve. Like, if they just do a remaster of For You, like, we probably won't get, like, a Subspace Emissary.
True.
Or we won't get anything particularly interesting.
See, yeah, right? that's super weird, like, in terms of what direction you're going to go with this remaster. Like, are they going to stick true to the previous game and just, okay, we're just going to bring everything from this game up, or are they going to add, like, extra stuff to it?
Well, and then you get to
I can only beat up Master Hand soon.
And then you get to the point where this is just me as a sort of Nintendo traditionalist.
Yeah.
Smash is a franchise that's, like, a once-a-generation thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want two Smash games on this generation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, like, when I think of Smash, like, I think of, like, I also, this has been the first time that this has ever happened. So it's kind of hard to, like, okay, well, how is this actually going to work in the Smash ecosystem, I guess? Like, are people just going to look at this and be like, oh, well, this is good. Thanks, Nintendo. They play it for a little bit and then you go back to what they were playing before? Or are they going to really, like, latch on to this?
Well, because it's Smash, people are just going to latch onto it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And it's also the first one for Switch, too.
So then how's this going to conflict with, like, for example, like, didn't the Nintendo DS have Smash on it?
Yes.
So yeah. Then you have this portable handheld game that's in theory, like, I feel like you're going to be eating, you're kind of cannibalizing your audience.
Well, to that end, the one good part of news of they're just bringing this one up is that it will just take all the content from the 3DS one and put it into the main game with HD graphics.
So what's the point of owning a 3DS at this point?
If you like
Pokemon.
If you well,
not
if you like Nintendo is still supporting the 3DS. So, like, if you like portable games on the go and you don't want to buy a $300 Switch, you're if you like games on the go and you don't want to go out and get the brand new Switch, especially if you got kids and things like that, Nintendo's still supporting a 3DS game. The 3DS type of game that came with for Wii U was more like a support game rather than like a, this is the brand new Smash for Wii U. It's like, this is like those link cables that you can plug. Like, when you were playing Crystal Chronicles and you can plug your Game Boy Advance and you look like that. That's more like it is.
Oh, man. Crystal Chronicles, man. That was like, when we actually got to play together, it was a hoot. But, good Lord, it was a mission put together.
Kind of like when you're trying to trade Pokemon back and forth.
Oh, my God. Don't get me
started. Oof. That's why you with yourself, right?
That's what you got the DS for. That's what you got the DS
no
for.
No friends.
No, man.
That's one reason I've probably had about 10 to 15 Nintendo portable devices in my life.
Yeah.
More than just because of the training Pokemon.
So, Avery had a lot of disposable income. Still does.
That and parents will love me.
Ouch. Speaking of parents who love me, we're going to go to the culture topic.
Wow, you came back,
right?
You know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For a while, you had a tone down on the segues. And nope. You just came.
Fire.
Throwback to our early days when
every segue was trash.
And it was capsized by a Jamaican air horn.
Wait, Cam, give yourself some credit. Not all your segues are bad.
Yeah, not
pretty fire.
Yeah.
After a certain point, I was just doing it because it was a bit.
So, speaking of a bit.
Wow, cheap. All right, anyway. So, we're jumping into the culture topic. This week, we are kind of highlighting rampant and extreme fandom and just how problematic and destructive that can be, especially in like it's destructive in all forms of art. But since gaming is our platform,
right,
we're gonna talk about it.
Right. So
Avery, you're good, man.
No.
So
you need the strength of the black.
I'm about to get a sauce of grape Fanta and pour it in his mouth.
So
here's the Black Panther aside. So does the heart shaped herb work for everyone and not just people from the Panther tribe? As an aside, continue.
So there was reports.
There will be no challenge.
I'm turning off your mics. So so there was a couple reports. Not a couple. They were all of the same thing. A prominent what do you call him? Streamer? Mm-hmm. Gavin Free. Rooster Teeth.
Right.
Okay. Own.
I say YouTuber, YouTube gaming personality.
There you go. We'll say that. Him and his girlfriend
Meg Turney
were at home and a, we'll call him a fan, a quote unquote fan.
A fan of Meg specifically.
Okay, it was a fan made. Okay. He had broke into their home and fired a gun.
Oh
Jesus.
Yeah. And like, this, the news was put out there, I believe, last week as of time of recording. And the news was put out there 2 weeks ago, I believe.
I believe the way the story went is the events happened. No one at Rooster Teeth
talked about it.
And then the story was released, I want to say, 3 weeks later.
Okay. So last episode of Rooster Teeth podcast, at the end of their podcast, Bernie, I believe, was talking. He actually like mentioned something because the news was put out there, and you know, like Gav didn't really talk too much about it. He was just like, "Yeah, it was terrifying, but like you know, I'm grateful that the police got there in time. Like they got there in 4 minutes, which is pretty impressive." Like so, but
for how long that was gonna take?
You're right, but it's kind of crazy where like we are in the era right now where a fan can radicalize himself to the point where like, yeah, I'm just gonna go and do this thing.
Well,
the fan in particular was particularly coming for Gavin. He was a obsessed. I don't want to put words in some. I don't want to mince words.
Yeah.
He was quote unquote in love with Meg and wanted to kill Gavin because of that.
Oh shit. Oh,
I mean, honestly, I think it's more of a problem. I mean, it's more. There's more propensity for that to happen now in this day and age with social media and all that stuff. But it's not new. I mean, Selena got killed by an obsessed.
Well, that's also true. Know? Yeah. It's I don't want to necessarily say that like. Well, this is a first in our era, but it's just like,
but
come
I think
on.
Here's what makes it uniquely a little bit concerning for our era in terms of gaming. So you think about the idea of streaming or having a Twitch channel and you're doing it in your house because you want to create a sense of community.
Right.
Right.
And so you're essentially inviting people into your space and then to take a look at what's going on in your house.
Yeah.
And so then you get this obsessed fan who's radicalized, and all it takes for them is like, start putting pieces together, like, oh, this person's based out of Florida. This,
right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, I think that's what makes it different. Or we think about, like, how people squat, like, those squat streams.
Yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah.
And, like, you know, because people are getting upset about whatever's happening in a game or they think it's a joke or they think it's funny. And then, in terms, you take a community. The gaming community is already somewhat poisonous.
Yes, yes.
That's
toxic, as some would say.
Yeah, toxic.
Yeah.
And so now the advent of streaming it's kind of like how we say about cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
You're always streaming, so you're always in constant interface with the people who are either bullying you or who have access to your life.
Right, right.
And so I think now as content creators, it forces you to think differently because you're thinking, well, I want to connect with my fans because, for example, you have Patreon, you have Twitch, and they are actually financially supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to create this this level of privacy or barrier
because
of my own safety. And so as a content creator, you're forced to kind of think or walk through what's the best way to approach that.
Yeah, it's hard to balance the two, essentially. And
death threats like it's Oprah, man. We're like, it's just...
Yeah,
All I do is play PUBG all day.
Right. I wasn't trying to start no problems. Right.
Play Fortnite.
Okay.
I didn't even download it. But okay.
Oh, wait. That was a piece of news I was going to mention, whatever. Move on. You mentioned Fortnite. Apparently John Wick is in Fortnite.
What?
John Wick?
Yeah.
Wow.
In the Battle Royale mode. You can play as John Wick.
Don't kill a dog in front of him.
But yeah, continue on the thought.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen my aunt? Okay, good.
But no, I mean, that is a general basis of my thought. I think post this incident, content creators are going to have to think constructively about, well, how do I, like the space I create.
Right.
And, you know, we even talk about, like, for example, on our podcast, and we want to talk about the content we want to bring to our viewers, and we're saying, like, okay, well, like, for example, interviewing someone or bringing someone here, and we think about the space we're recording, we're like, okay, well, how do we still bring the best content to our listeners and to our followers, but at the same time think about our personal safety?
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
And you think about also what reason why, like, Twitch and, like, this type of content is so, like, popular is because it's relatively low cost, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you buy, like, a streaming, like, camera, you buy, like, a gaming chair, you sit, and you think about, like, okay, I do this because it's low cost. Now, because of what's happening with safety, am I going to have to rent a space now in order to properly stream or...
Right.
Or do I get, like, a green screen and make it seem like it's a home or, you know...
Yeah. Just to, like, remove yourself from your actual location so people don't... They can't look into your home.
But then gamers are so fickle because then they're going to say, well, now this person's all Hollywood or this person...
Yeah. Change. Right, yeah.
I like his channel back when he did whatever.
Well, back when they were in a spare bedroom.
Right.
I mean, that's, like, really the... fandom is and has always been a double-edged sword.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, just, I think since social media blew up, that really, like, exposed the darkness of fandom in a big way. Mm-hmm. Because people are just... For every even-kiltered, well-adjusted, respectful fan, there is, like... a myriad of just others who are in some way, shape, or form problematic or creepy or legitimately dangerous.
Yeah.
And it's like, bruh, like it makes you want to not do it sometimes.
That's
true. Know?
Yeah. And, like, again, I guess the peek behind the curtain for us, we've talked about, like, well, when we approach YouTube, like, what is that content? Mm-hmm. And, like, just... based off of the, like, the current news where, like, monetization on YouTube has been, like, decreasing and, like, now we have, like, to deal with the types of fans we would be interacting with, like, it makes everything just more difficult.
Yeah.
And I already told you, like, I mean, I guarantee that we're gonna have to deal with a lot of N-bombs in them comments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's gonna be a thing, too.
Be first, nigger.
Right.
Four monkeys. Oh my god.
Spirit chugging jigaboos playing Overwatch.
Look at all them Winstons.
I bet you love Doomfist, don't you, monkey?
I don't have to take this.
You're right, you don't have to take this, Avery.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but I mean, you got anything to say on it, Avery?
This is just, and well, it's, I have less anything interesting and new to say based on it, beyond anything you all have said. This is just emblematic of all types of fandom, and as a video game, as streaming and being a YouTube Let's Play personality has sort of enveloped all of media around games. Mm-hmm. It's become a necessity to put your personal life out there.
Right.
If you're... The only way you build a community is if you build, for lack of a better term, a friendship with your audience.
Yeah,
and, like, you can't be friends with someone if someone's like, I'm not going to tell you my real name.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to sell this idea.
Yeah, unless you take on a specific type of identity, and it's very clear that this is not who I am. This is what, like, Dr. Disrespect is a great example of, like, I don't think there was anything of his real life in the character he was playing.
Yeah.
But then he had his little problems, and he had to come out and say, for people to empathize with what has happened to my personal life, yeah, I have to show them who I am personally.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And it's one of the things, as someone who's very not into social media,
yeah,
and like putting anything of my real life out there, like this, that is the part of this and what we're doing that scares me the most.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. I also agree. Like, I, as much as like I am present on social media, like I do understand and respect the fact that it's not everything that you're putting out there. Like,
right,
you are sort of what's the word? You're sort of
creating a version of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're picking and choosing what you're
putting. There you go.
Yes, an avatar. And I mean, but like, yeah, it's like,
may
you're
not rare for Xbox 360.
You're not showing everything there is to yourself when you post on social media, unless you are showing everything to yourself. But
so
that's a different thing.
Press X to start vlog. Well, okay, I'm almost
right. But like, I mean, my thing is like, when it comes to streaming, there is a number of factors where you can control, but then there is other factors that you can't control.
Right.
And then that's where it gets a little scary in terms of people who are intelligent enough to pick up those other things.
It doesn't even require someone to be a detective to figure out where you are and who you are, or it needs an IP address.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it like
I'm
that.
Not even
that's how swatting
guys
works.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna front, guys. Like, this is something that that's been like in the back of my mind, but this conversation is really bringing it to the forefront. Like,
yeah,
I'm a little concerned about how my online persona is gonna affect y'all.
What do you mean?
You know, because like, well, for, but when I am.
Oh. Yes. Because you know, he exists as far as, yeah.
Yes, queen. Okay. I'm just a little concerned, like, you know, because you guys will be able, especially Avery has been able to kind of like stay under the radar on his terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that like, you know, let's say that I end up in, like, I don't know, Two Black, Two Panther, or whatever.
Two Black.
That is a joke that he's told two me Panther. And I'm angry. He's throwing it at one now.
That is
directed by John
Singer. Two Black, Two Panther.
Two Black. And, you know, or like, let's say, man, I, you know, my career ends up taking off. Yeah. And, like, I have a following separate in a way. But, like, they know that I'm a part of Press X.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, and I would just hope that that wouldn't negatively affect us in any way, because there's a lot of heat coming down from me.
Right, right.
Onto this.
Like, it's offloaded onto
exactly
us.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ah. If that happens, we'll deal with it.
Okay. They're gonna kill me.
Oh, no.
All you'll know is we'll never call on you. Well, I will personally never call on you.
I appreciate that, man.
I mean, I'll... Nah. I mean, because you, like, one, we ain't got to worry about calling you because you just idiot.
I'm not that guy.
Right. All right. I mean, you know, it sucks. Everyone just has to, I don't know. It's always tough to end like stuff like this because I mean,
everyone just needs to be prepared for the consequences.
Right, right. Yeah. And like, if we just all keep moving forward, hopefully this happens less. And less.
We don't want this to seem like we're going to try to close ourselves off or wall ourselves up from you guys. You know, we're going to definitely continue to try and engage our community that's growing. And we're going to keep trying to build something with you guys.
Right, right.
It's just, you know, we hope that one day we're able to have a strong enough and respectful enough community that if we do get outliers, they will point them out and they will be dealt with.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And I think, like, part of that stuff kind of happens in the community itself,
right,
like, regulating, like, all right, you're out of line, dude. You got to chill out. It's not that,
I'll give
you
a good example. I was watching a Kind of Funny Games Daily episode. I never post anything on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And not Twitter. I mean, YouTube. I barely make any. I'm always lurking.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. And I just read a comment, and it's just someone attacking Andrew Renee, like, on a, like, like just attacking her.
Yeah.
And I just like, I need to say something. It's like see something, say something. Well, I just posted in the comments like, hey man, regardless of how you feel about her like personal views, like the way you're expressing this right now is just uncool.
Right, yeah.
And I just ended the conversation and moved on. I didn't think about it again.
Yeah.
That guy probably came back and said something super fucked up to me as well for defending her. Whatever. But like, we all just have to take some personal responsibility for how we see the world and how we want the world to be seen and step up for things like this to happen. Like, the good thing that came out of this Gavin and Meg thing is the amount of love and support those two got from the community. Right.
That's the silver lining.
Here. Yeah.
Right. I think that's
accountability.
That's a good way to end this.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this has been another episode of Press Act to Start Podcast, Season 2, guys.
Season 2.
We made it. We hope that you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it and talking about it. Cam, what's so funny? What's so funny, Cam?
I just thought about Marcus saying, two black, two pants.
Oh, jeez. All right.
How bad Too Fast and Furious was.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how bad that movie could be?
All right. Don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcasting apps. Every little bit helps. If you missed any of this, you can find all the details and much more on our website, PressX2Start.com. Until next time, we've been Press X to Start.
Yeah.
Peace.
Oh, and by the way, one new thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be using a revolving wheel of outro beats. So the first beat you'll hear is the same, but we'll always be using something different on the outro. And last week's and this one are from Mavy, M-A-V-Y, and you can find him on Instagram @MarcoMavy. Shout out to you, man. Thanks.
Peace.